The easiest snapshot into a different culture is through its food.
From the Coin Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
Hello, Emily.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
Nice.
So I hear you've got something going this afternoon that is pretty cool.
Yeah, big day for me, Ian. I get my second dose of my vaccine today.
That's fantastic news. I can tell you that while I'm not running out hugging everybody I see on the streets, the level of relief that came with getting vaccinated and being fully vaccinated is great. It's just a level of relief and comfort that I haven't felt in a long time. So I'm excited for you to get there. It's a really cool thing.
It is such a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm starting my 2-week countdown to be considered fully vaccinated now. The CDC just came out with that new guidance this week about places that we can be without a mask if we're fully vaccinated. I'm a little nervous because I got the Moderna vaccine, and people have been saying that the second dose kind of knocks you out for a couple days. So I'm bracing for maybe a little low-grade fever or some flu-like symptoms, you know, for a day or two. But obviously, I would much rather go through like a couple days of discomfort than potentially getting COVID or giving somebody else COVID who's going to get really sick. You know, I mean, to me, it's like a no-brainer.
It was an absolute no-brainer for me and for us. My wife and I both got vaccinated about a month ago now. Like I said, it's been such a relief. I think about things a little differently and can actually envision a time that maybe I'm not walking through the doors of a grocery store with a mask on.
Sure.
Or that I will be able to have friends over that come in my house, not just hang out in my garage.
Right.
And you said light at the end of a tunnel. It just, I sighed. You know, you get the shot and then you wait for your 2 weeks. But when that time came and went, it was, well, because of what we've been through this last year, I'd consider it almost life altering.
I don't think that's a hyperbole to say life changing at all. I mean, it's interesting. We've heard from some restaurant owners in the last few weeks, too, who've been saying like they were waiting for all of their employees to be able to get fully vaccinated before they were going to reopen indoor dining. Some bars were kind of taking that approach. And then, of course, it's like kind of bittersweet that this week's episode of our podcast is coming out on the day that a lot of Oregon counties are having to shut back down again.
I believe I understand the science behind those decisions and the reasons they're being made to prevent a violent fourth surge. I simply cannot understand what it's like to be a business, a restaurant, a gym, any personal service establishment that is trying to navigate this, basically not knowing week to week if another shoe is going to fall, if they've done enough to get out in front of it. Business is hard enough, especially the restaurant business is hard enough. I can't imagine dealing with that.
It really is hard to wrap your head around. And my heart goes out to anyone right now who is unemployed or who is wondering if they're going to be able to keep their business going. I mean, Portland has such a cherished food scene. And I have so much fun talking to all of our different chefs and bartenders and, you know, learning about new things that are up and coming in Portland scene. And I think we all know, right, how special Portland's bars and restaurants and food fusion and creative forces are. You know, we've known that for years, and it's been just heart-wrenching to see what an impact this has had on this industry, especially over the past year. I understand, you know, we do have to listen to the science and we've got to take care of people's health. I hope that there's going to be more help coming for the people that do have to shut down right now. And I hope that people are going to be supporting all these restaurants with takeout, and that once travel and tourism starts to pick back up again, that more people are going to come in and give Portland a chance.
You and I know Portland's food scene is amazing, and people who live here know Portland's food scene is amazing. Portland is getting a real good chance to show off some of its great food on this season of Top Chef. And as a longtime fan of Top Chef and a longtime fan of Portland's food scene, I'm a little surprised it took them this long to get here, but they're here now at a very important time.
Right? At a time when I think we really do need to show everyone some of the great things that are happening in this state that you don't always see on the news every night. And it's going to give everyone this cool, in-depth look at just how much Oregon and Portland has to offer. That's why I was so excited to sit down and talk with one of the contestants on this season of Top Chef, Chef Sarah Hammond.
She was really cool. That was a great conversation to listen to as the two of you were having it. She is obviously a free spirit and somebody super bubbly, but she's obviously, she knows what she's doing. She knows what she's talking about. And I'm very anxious to see where this season of Top Chef takes her.
She started out really strong. Week one, you know, coming out of the gate, winning challenges. It's so interesting to see how much she initially doubted herself when she brings such a wealth of culinary experience to the table. So for anyone who's unfamiliar with Sarah's background, or if you haven't watched every episode this season of Top Chef, Sarah got really into food, even as a young child, loved learning about other cultures through food. She actually spent some time in Spain, both just visiting there and then living there for a while, eventually working in a restaurant there. And since coming back to the States, she really made a name for herself in the Bay Area. She was named Rising Star Chef for the San Francisco Chronicle back in 2017. She's been named to Zagat's 30 Under 30 list. She was a James Beard semifinalist Rising Star. She got a couple different Rising Star awards in 2016 and 2017. And she really cut her teeth in the restaurant business. And then she made this move to Portland when she wanted some different things in her career. She was looking for a different work-life balance. She's found a really unique opportunity as the head chef at Soder Vineyards in Carlton, Oregon. So that's where she's currently employed. And she had this awesome opportunity to be part of this season of Top Chef. And I think she's gonna turn this experience into so many cool things. I can't wait to see what impact she has going forward on the future world of food, in particular, sustainable agriculture and cooking. Hi, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. We're in that springtime weather right now where I don't ever know what it's going to feel like outside, despite the fact that our meteorologist gives us a forecast every day. I just went out to grab coffee and got caught in the rain, and I will do that for the next, you know, month or so, probably.
It's been so beautiful the last 2 weeks. It's been like summertime already, and it got me super spoiled. So now I came back from Seattle this last weekend, and I'm like, oh man, there's rain again.
I know. We had that little full spring, full summer.
Yep. I'm sure we'll have another one soon enough too.
Oh, totally. But that is just, you know, one of the many things that we love about Portland, right?
Yes.
Season. Yeah. So let's jump in here on some cooking and all things culinary. What got you originally into food and cooking?
I think when I look back at my childhood, you know, we didn't really go on vacation very often and we didn't do a whole lot of traveling abroad. But what we did do, what my parents were really great about, is that we went out to dinner like once a month. And usually I would always insist on where we go, but I would always choose something so different, Indian food, or I wanted to eat sushi, or I wanted to go to Chinese food. And for me, I think it was just this way of traveling in a sense and getting to know a different culture through its food. I've just always been the weird person, you know, I want to eat the weirdest things. I want to do all the, have as many flavors in my mouth as possible. I think I'm just a really good snacker. So my love of snacking led me to a career in cooking.
Nice. As a fellow snacker, I can appreciate that. Absolutely. It is, I think, one of the best ways to instantly get a sense of a different culture and values, not only what people eat, but how people eat and when people eat and just everything that's involved with sharing a meal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that is the easiest way and the easiest snapshot into a different culture is through its food. And as a child, for me, I wanted to be anywhere but where I was, if that makes sense. So I always had this travel bug, and eating just satisfied that in a way when I was a kid that made so much sense in my life. And I just kept on with it.
Oh, totally. Totally. Now you're a California native, right?
Yes, I am from Southern California, but I lived in Northern California. So I don't know. I don't have a loyalty to SoCal or NorCal.
Okay. You're not going to weigh in on that debate.
No, not weighing in on that.
That's fair. I was looking on your Instagram. You describe yourself in your Instagram bio as a yogurt queen with a small fish fetish. So you have to explain that to me and kind of tell me a little bit about your cooking style, how you kind of came into, you know, the type of foods that you like to work with and make and all of that.
So the yogurt queen, I'm sure you all know if you've been watching the show that I use yogurt sometimes. you know, it's funny. I don't know why I eat so much yogurt while shooting. I just did. It was like this weird comfort that I gravitated towards and I just kept putting yogurt and stuff. And well, I guess it worked out. But the real reason is that I really enjoy the acidity that yogurt brings to food. A lot of my food is very light and bright and fresh. And so by using yogurt, you can add this sense of richness to your dish because it has that creamy dairy. But it is so tangy that you get that instantaneous acid cut. And it just is really well balanced, in my opinion. You just have to be careful when adding it, because if you heat up yogurt, it's not like sour cream. Sour cream kind of just mixes in with your food. But yogurt, because it's made of milk, will sometimes break. So you got to make sure you add it right at the end.
Interesting. Okay, good to know.
Yeah. And then so tiny fish. I've always loved tiny fish. I think fishing for me is something that reminds me of being a kid and hanging out with my dad on the lake, and just, we would be lazy fishers, you know, sitting in the chair on the shore and just kind of waiting, more waiting than actual fishing. But for me, that's a really, really special time in my life. And as I started my journey with cooking, one of the things that I really, really loved to make when I was working in San Francisco, we would get really fresh anchovies. And because I've worked in Spain, one of my favorite ingredients is anchovies. So I would process the anchovies like boquerones or pickled. And it was just the one thing in restaurants people would always freak out about. And I got so excited because no one really likes anchovies. You know, a lot of people are anchovy haters. They like fish, but they don't like small, oily fish. And So I figured if I can convert non-anchovy lovers to be anchovy lovers, I should start a business. So I'm working super hard right now on launching a business that is kind of all-encompassing, not just tiny fish, but I think it's a really great, we will be working with tiny fish, but it's a great kind of figurative significance too, you know, in the sense of me, obviously, very much on the show, feeling like a tiny fish out of their environment. You know, the whole business idea is that we do want to support the small fishing boat community as well. So just really putting an emphasis on the smaller community of fishing and giving back to the environment in that sense. But
that's really cool.
More details to come.
I'm excited. I'm sure we'll have to check back in with you as you're ready to announce more. Well, so I'm a fellow tiny fish lover. I have to tell you this story. I grew up eating this snack that until recently, I didn't think there was anything weird about this. And then I have a couple friends who have like picked on me mercilessly for this one. So my mom said that like, this was something her grandma ate. We always had this. We would do not anchovies, but sardines, right? Little canned sardines, right? You pop them out of the can. If you get the ones in like oil, a little bit of smoke or whatever, awesome flavor with some grainy mustard on a cracker, sardines and mustard on a cracker, right?
That's a perfect snack.
Isn't that good?
It's amazing. I mean, I love all sorts of tinned fish. That was pretty much my diet in Spain. I think I gained like 20 pounds because I was just eating bread and tinned fish and oil. There's just not enough fish snacks on the market, really, you know, and it's so funny. We did just have Earth Day and I talked a lot about sustainability. And one way to really be more sustainable is just to eat more seafood. Honestly, like just that one little thing is a really huge step in sustainability, because it's just less fossil fuel emissions to fish as opposed to raised land animals. Just that small fact is incredible and can do a lot of good to the environment as well as for your belly.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's very nutritious. It's a good little protein rich snack. Get your omegas in there.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've got a few friends who, you know, oh, that's disgusting. And anytime anyone gives me a hard time about my sardines now, I'm just going to play this podcast.
Yes. Play this podcast. I mean, even the word, people use the word fishy in a bad sense, you know, and you know, just because something's fishy doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to say I've got Chef Sarah on my side. Leave me alone. Well, you mentioned that it is super popular in Spain. So you lived there for some time. You got a lot of your culinary experience there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I lived in Spain for about a year after high school. Not really culinary related. This is kind of when I was just hanging out after high school. Random story. My dad met this lady in a chat room. She was British. She happened to live in the south of Spain. And so after I graduated high school, my dad retired and wanted to go to Spain. And I was like, yeah, sign me up. So I spent a year in Spain, not really doing a whole lot, but definitely eating a whole lot. It was incredible to just kind of be immersed in a culture where, you know, your life almost revolves around food. I love that. You plan your dinners, you know, your whole day is planned out by like when you're going to eat, who you're going to eat with, you know, how much wine you're going to drink. I really love that. And then I came back to the States and went to culinary school and worked a bunch. And then it was finally, you know, I was feeling the itch again to travel. So they have a list of like the best restaurants in the world. And one of the restaurants that was on my bucket list, Asador Echevarri, to eat at, I just emailed and asked if they had a spot for me for a season. And they said, absolutely. So I went to the Basque region and spent a season, which is usually from summer to winter, but I was in the winter to summer season and just worked and got to eat a lot of food. And we did work 6 days a week, so I wasn't traveling so much. And then of course, you know, that last day you have to celebrate. So you're one day off, you've got to do laundry while you're not feeling super hot.
Oh, that just sounds like such a cool experience. Do you think, has that really had an influence on your cooking from that point forward too?
You know, I think for me, I'm a very experiential person, so to speak. Like I have a crazy memory for where I was at a certain time or you know, like I know I was eating whilst this conversation was happening. So I think the culmination of all of my experiences is really the way that I cook now, because I don't cook just Spanish food. You know, I might cook a Spanish inspired meal, but I'm going to use miso, or I might use, you know, some different ingredients from different cultures to really make it my own. I think the having a huge pantry in your head, meaning knowing that you can use salt or you can use miso or you can use preserved black beans or you can use the brine from feta cheese instead of salt really makes your food super interesting. And it's a way to add flavor without just going straight for the salt, you know, like that's a flavor we all know. We understand it, but I try to find different ways that I can access all the experiences I've had to make something even more special.
Yeah. Yeah. Just add a new twist to it. That's really cool. Yeah. Create a depth and a story to a dish.
Absolutely.
I like that idea.
Cooking's amazing. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's kind of like acting in a sense. Your life is just full of failure and rejection. And then you're like, oh, okay, now I know what not to do next time.
I guess the nice thing about it, though, is there's a next time. Like, it's very easy to wipe the slate clean and start on something new.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very rare for me to work on a recipe and get it the first try. So that's what makes the show super hard. You know, you're filming and a lot of times you don't know what you're making. You've never made it before and you've got one chance. That's it.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, how was your experience on Top Chef different from a lot of your culinary career, especially now, because you're working out at Soder Vineyards as the chef out of that winery in Carlton. So that has to be a different vibe from the restaurant scene that you came up in. I would imagine both are pretty different from, you know, a reality show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I came up to Oregon from San Francisco about 3 years ago, and that was for no other reason than just more life balance. I had been working for a really long time and there was this moment, I think on a day off where I didn't have anything to do. And I thought to myself, I don't have any hobbies. You know, I was just like, I don't know what to do because I can't have hobbies and I neglect all my friendships because I'm working all the time. And it was just for me, I really wanted to have a fresh start. So I moved up to Oregon and I worked in a restaurant for about a year and a half. But again, it wasn't doing it for me. It was still the same thing where I'm working all the time. So working at Soder Vineyards is amazing. I get to walk outside every day. You know, it's stuff like that that you don't get to do in normal kitchens. I get to walk outside. I get to like go hug a goat if I want to hug a goat. It's a really lovely work environment. A lot more chill, definitely more chill than Top Chef. I was a little concerned going onto the show about, I don't know, I haven't really been in like a fast-paced restaurant. Even the restaurants in Portland aren't as fast-paced.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens to me when the cameras turn on and I'm in competitive mode, but it's like this difference there. I don't know. I was like, all right, your time starts now. And then I'm the person like running around, sweating like crazy.
You're tearing it up.
Yeah, it was wild. I've literally never done anything like that before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected the worst.
Oh gosh. I mean, you came out of the gate strong. Night one, it was like, Sarah's here to play.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, after like that night, I went back to my hotel room and I had a good like 5 minute stare at myself in the mirror session, just being like, oh my God, what just happened? Yeah, it was, it was pretty crazy. I think I definitely learned a lot about myself going through the process and then now seeing what has been, you know, put into a beautiful package of a show is again, just more enlightening. And it really taught me, I was so hard on myself every single day. And I just, that's no way to live. I'm going to be honest with you. It's no way to live. You know, all the other competitors, I know they're suffering from a lot of anxiety, just like I was, but I don't know. They were able to just put on a confident face and at least like give off an air of confidence. And I'm over here in the corner, like with my head in my hands. I just didn't know how to do it. And just being more confident after the fact has been a huge bonus for me in my life, both in my career, but in my personal life. It's been pretty awesome for me. It's still so crazy. I didn't realize that Top Chef was a big thing.
It's funny, like earlier in this interview, you kind of compared yourself to a small fish and you know, in the first few episodes of this season, I think when it's time to step up to the plate and kind of sell yourself and your dish, you play your hand sometimes and you come in and you say, oh, I would have done 10 things differently, you know? So it's crazy to see. It's really relatable. I think a lot of people go through that in different ways, right? Where they see the inside of their head, and there's probably so many things that you're worried about that no one else would ever even pick up on. So it's cool to see that has given you kind of this new sense of confidence on the other side of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's putting yourself out there and being super vulnerable to a large audience. You know, you can't really do much except for you laugh at yourself and learn and grow. And, you know, before this whole thing, I was hated getting my pictures taken, everything, was not into it. Did not pay attention to my social media at all. And now that I am in this position, I'm hustling hard. You know, I don't want to sit in the corner and just watch this go by because I was too shy or too nervous or scared. You know, I think I was in the most nervous, anxious position I had been in for 2 months while we were filming. And now, you know, I did it. So I'm going to just keep being nervous and staying uncomfortable and doing things that scare the crap out of me. And hopefully it'll still work out. I mean, even just doing interviews, you know, I get so nervous that I'm going to say the wrong thing, have to backpedal. But I think it's just getting over those fears for me that have really transformed my life for the better and forever, honestly, which very sentimental, I know. For most people, it's just a competition. But for me, it really did. It gave me a little kick in the butt that I needed.
No, it's really cool. Do you have any advice for anyone who is feeling the heat in whatever kitchen they're in? You know, maybe it's not in the culinary world, but for someone who is kind of standing on the edge and struggling to take that deep breath and jump in the pool, what would you tell them?
I don't know. I think for me, every day I just say life's too short. You know, who cares what someone else says? I don't care if someone wants to call me sell out for going on TV or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter to me because I had the most fun I've ever had in my life. I met the most amazing people who I continue to have fun with, who I would never would have met otherwise. Doesn't really matter what other people think. As long as you're having fun doing what you're doing, that's the most important part, because, you know, if you're not having fun, you're not going to give it your all. And I know that about myself. And I think it's just about making it fun, because work's not going to get any easier, at least in the culinary world. So just make it fun and do your best.
Definitely.
Not everyone's going to make it, but at least you can say you tried.
Was there a judge in particular that you were really nervous putting your dish in front of? Who scared you the most?
Who scared me? Probably Tom. I think Tom is super scary to give food to, just because he's been around for so long. You know, he's been grinding it out in a professional kitchen for years and years. He knows his stuff, and it is incredibly intimidating just talking to him, honestly.
I bet. But, you know, I think one of the things that's so cool about this season of Top Chef, I know, at least for everyone here in Portland, why so many people are, you know, probably so excited to tune in every week, is it's been such a cool showcasing of this city and Oregon as a whole. I mean, things that we've known for a long time here, right? Like how awesome Portland's food scene is. And now the rest of the country gets to see that too.
Yeah.
You guys were, you know, you were filming during this time last year when we were dealing with social justice protests, a lot of unrest in the city, wildfires, all of the economic hardship that are, especially in particular, you know, our restaurant industry was going through with the pandemic. What do you think having this show showcase Portland and Oregon right now, what do you think that does for this city?
I think for me, the biggest takeaway that I was really excited that hopefully other people took away as well from the show or continue to take away is that Portland is a lot more diverse than it gets credit for. I think that there are so many people doing so many amazing things here. And the show just being able to showcase the amount of not only talent, but again, that diversity of food that we do have here, it is only going to just bring people in, I hope. I think it's really obvious the beauty of Portland and of Oregon. They did some great, great shots for the show. And at some times, the weather cooperated to get those really moody Pacific Northwest shots. But for me, my main, the thing I'm most proud of is the diversity that's seen throughout the show in Portland proper. That means a lot to me, especially coming from San Francisco, where, you know, I would had a very large group of diverse friends and there's food everywhere and, you know, you can eat around the world pretty easily, but you can also eat around the world pretty easily in Portland too, at lots of food cart pods. So I think they have done a really great job at showcasing that, you know, especially on a season that is being touted as one of the, you know, not only the most skilled chefs, but the more diverse season of Top Chef. I think it's an important, important moment for all entertainment in general right now.
We're going to take a quick break, and next we're talking tattoos and French fries and which local favorite Chef Sarah likes best.
The Coin Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
So I want to kind of switch gears here on a not so food related note. Well, people who, you know, have watched you on the show or who follow you on social media probably noticed that you've got this like killer sleeve of like really cool tattoos. I want to ask about your ink, because I think one of the coolest ways to get to know people is to ask them what kinds of things are important enough that they want to permanently put it on their body. So just tell me a little bit about some of your tats and like, do you have a favorite?
Okay. So the very first tattoo I got was on my foot in Spain. I think I was like 16 or 17 at the time, and it was a butterfly. You know, a lot of my tattoos don't have a lot of meaning. I just really love a lot of the design elements and the art in Asian culture. So I have a lot of Asian inspired tattoos. Lots of good luck charms. What do I got? I've got a lucky rabbit foot. I've got a lucky bok choy. Lots of good luck charms, because if you are watching the show, you know I'm all about the good luck charms. The one meaningful tattoo I do have is I have a portrait of my dad who passed away 8 years ago. So that's the one with meaning.
Oh.
But all the other tattoos for me, it's more about the art and less about the meaning. I really want, whenever I get tattooed, I go to, I seek out the artist. I don't necessarily seek out the design. I'll kind of guide them like, hey, I really want a panda eating lucky bamboo.
I saw that one. It's very cute. awesome.
But that's kind of where I stop at that. You know, I'm pretty broad and I let the artists do their work. It's the same thing going into a restaurant and eating a chef's food to me. You know, it's, you do what you do best. You know what you do best. So just do that. You know, it's more about the aesthetic, I think, than the significance, but yeah. I do have lots of good luck charms.
It's experiential for you. Just like food. Go and get the tattoo as well.
It sure is.
That's really neat. So I have a couple quick questions for you here as we wind things down. For me, like working in news, I often try to kind of avoid watching news or kind of, you know, consuming media at home. Cause it's like, I kind of need a break. Right. Is that the same for you with cooking? Like, do you like to cook for yourself or do you like to kind of make that work and take a break at home?
You know, I am so bad at going out to eat. I cook at home a lot. I'm one of my chef friends who I think cooks at home the most. I really enjoy simple food. Like I eat rice probably every day, rice and vegetables. I do love cooking at home. I think you can keep it so simple. You know, at work, it's different for me. At work, it's still fun and it's still cooking, but you have to, you know, you're cooking to an audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's odor for me. I have to pair the wine with the food. So at home, cooking is more of a... it's more intimate for me. Even if I'm just cooking for myself, it's this special, like that's my me time.
Totally.
And then, you know, if I do have, you know, a friend or whoever over, it's again, I cook with people. I don't just cook for people most of the time. So it's that experience of cooking with someone, that is super special to me and which is why I do it a lot.
Do you have a favorite dish that you really love to make most often? Or what's your go-to?
You know, honestly, I don't have a favorite dish, but I will say I love firing up the grill. Wood or charcoal, whatever you got. I love firing up the grill. I think there's something really beautiful about grilled meat. And again, it's about keeping it super simple. You can't go crazy with a grilled piece of meat or fish, you know, it's pretty much just a simple marinade and you get that flavor from the smoke. So, you know, I love spring and summer because I get to fire up the grill a lot.
It's almost grilling season. I get so nervous with the grill because I'm worried that I'm going to overcook stuff or mess it up.
Yeah. You know, it's about controlling the heat. So I guess if I had a suggestion for grilling well, especially if you're going to use charcoal or wood, you should make one side of your grill really hot and then the other side not so hot. So then it's like a burner. You can kind of control the heat where you have the high heat on one side, medium heat in the middle, and then you've got low on the other side.
Okay. I appreciate the tips. I'll see if maybe this grilling season I can get a little more practice in.
Yeah, maybe. It takes a little time. Patience is also another key for grilling. Patience.
Mm-hmm. I overthink it, I'm sure. Now, what would you say is your biggest food guilty pleasure? Do you have like fast food that you will sneak every now and then or like one favorite Portland restaurant or like food cart? Like I got to go there.
So I love chips and French fries. I'm a salty snack lady.
Nice.
I eat too many chips and French fries. It's like what I live on.
Who does the best? I'm going to put you on the spot here. This is a hotly debated topic. Who does the best fast food French fry? You have to pick one.
Oh no. Okay. So this is the thing though. I'm like a connoisseur. Okay. So I will say number one nostalgia for me, it wins my nostalgia award, is Jack in the Box seasoned French fries.
Ooh. Okay.
Curly fries. But Burgerville waffle fries, very delicious. Love those fries.
They are.
And it is really hard to be straight up regular classic McDonald's French fries.
McDonald's is the OG for a reason.
It's the OG French fry. It's so delicious. Chips, man, I'm a sucker for salt and vinegar chips. I can eat them back. So good. Or the dill pickle chips. I love dill pickle chips.
I haven't tried the dill pickle flavor. I think they'd be good. I haven't tried them yet.
They're incredible.
I usually go for sour cream and onion. So I feel like that's not too big of a jump.
I think I also have this, I just love melty cheese. I love melty cheese.
Oh yeah.
On anything. So delicious. So pizza's a real big favorite of mine.
Now you just have to figure out, I mean, because anchovies already have their place on pizza.
Exactly.
Now you're just going to have to do a pizza with some yogurt on top.
I'm doing an Instagram live today, and someone commented on my post about it. Will there be yogurt? And no, there wasn't going to be, but I think I'm going to go pick up some yogurt and make a yogurt sauce.
There you go.
On brand, right?
It's what the people have come to know and love.
It's what they want.
Give them what they want. Well, Sarah, it's been such a joy just as we start off this season of Top Chef to watch you cook and really come into your own. I'm excited to hear that it's helping you feel like maybe you're a little bit bigger fish than you think in the food chain. Because you are. It's been a lot of fun to watch you cook, and best of luck with all your projects you're going forward.
Thank you so much. This was really fun for me. Thank you.
That was fantastic to listen to her, and I'm excited to see where Sarah goes on this season of Top Chef, and I'm rooting for her, but she's totally out of line with her French fry selection. Her rankings are way off.
I knew this would ignite a debate. Okay, so then what's your top pick?
Well, first of all, in the fast food realm, Burger King's fries are better than McDonald's fries, and they have been for probably 15 or 20 years.
Burger King?
Yeah, Burger King. Burger King's fries are better than McDonald's fries.
Ian!
I don't eat a lot of fast food. Well, I'm going to qualify that. Is Five Guys fast food?
Yeah, I think you could consider Five Guys fries.
Okay, because those are the fries. Those okay. Steak fries are the fries. Burger King better than McDonald's. Five Guys better than anybody. I'll throw the Chick-fil-A waffle fry in there as a distant third.
Do you think Chick-fil-A waffle fry beats out Burgerville waffle fry?
I do.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm still reeling from a Burger King ranking. I thought I knew you. Burger King better than McDonald's? No, I agree with Sarah. I think McDonald's fries are the ultimate fry. It doesn't get better than that for just like a good classic solid French fry. I do agree with you, though. I think Five Guys fries are pretty great. I wish In-N-Out had better fries. I know some people love In-N-Out fries. I love everything else at In-N-Out.
I love everything else at In-N-Out.
And I just every time I wish the fries were better. They just need to be like a little bit hotter and crunchier. And I don't know.
So have you ever done this? Have you ever gone to one drive-thru to get the sandwich and then gone to another drive-thru to get the fries?
Before I answer that question, Ian, do you think I've ever done that?
No.
I totally have.
Okay, good. I kind of feel slovenly and a bit sloppy when I used to do that when I was in college. But, you know, you go through Taco Bell late at night, early in the morning, mm-hmm. and you get a couple tacos, but then you can't get good fries at Taco Bell. So what do? You go from one drive-thru to the other and you get, you know, eventually you can get to six or seven drive-thrus and make a pretty good seven-course meal out of it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I haven't done that many drive-thrus, but I will say I recommend a pairing of a Taco Bell quesadilla with McDonald's fries. I also have done the Wendy's Frosty McDonald's fry combo. If the McDonald's ice cream machine is broken and I can't get a McFlurry, because you got to dip your fries in your Frosty or your milkshake or whatever. That is the move.
The Wendy's Frosty McDonald's fries.
I think that reigns supreme.
Okay. We just came off a half an hour conversation with a rising star chef in Portland who's on one of the biggest reality cooking shows out there. And here you and I are talking about fast food. I
know. We are uncultured swine.
We've totally done the food culture of Portland no favors.
Yeah, we're not helping, but Chef Sarah certainly is. And I hope that this season of Top Chef in Portland is as well.
Thank you, Emily.
Yeah, have a good weekend, Ian.
The Coin Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.